Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 68. I'm recording it on Thursday, January 1st, 2009. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is 2008 was a very good year for stock investors. Let's hope that 2009 is not a repeat. Everybody likes to do these end of the year look back pieces and beginning of the new year look forward pieces. And I've been talking in several of the recent podcasts about something I call X-ray vision. And X-ray vision is the different perspective that the rational investor brings to everything he hears or reads about stock investing. And so, you know, I started out as a passive investor, like everybody else, back in the mid-1990s. I began putting together my plan for early retirement, and I wanted to invest my money effectively since I was relying on it to stay alive, to pay the cost, to pay the bills for my family and myself. And I learned about some flaws in the passive investing model, specifically the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, the studies we all use to plan our retirements. And that got me on a journey that's been an incredible journey, learning things about how stock investing works in the real world. And been doing that on the internet for close to 7 years now during these discussions we refer to as the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate. And during the course of that time, I've learned more and more and more incredible things about just how messed up, just how mixed up our understanding of how stock investing works is. And, you know, the reality is that just about everything we've heard about stock investing for the past 20, 30 years is wrong. Now, it's not quite right to say it's all wrong, because the conventional advice is based on research that was done starting in the 1960s, 1970s, and right on through to the current day. But a lot of that research added very important insights into how to invest. So there's a lot of great stuff we've learned. And we've learned even more great stuff in the past three decades, starting from about 81 is when Robert Shiller did his first study showing that valuations affect long-term returns. And there's been more and more and more evidence that way. And it's now a mountain of evidence. It's now really no reasonable person can argue otherwise. And that changes everything. That changes the history of investing, because we have come to believe at an earlier time that passive investing was the way to go. That the thing to do was to always leave your stock allocation at the same level, because prices don't really change the long-term value proposition of stocks. That timing is not necessary, or even the timing does not work. Even the timing is not a good idea. How many times have you heard that? Timing does not work. Timing never works. Something like that. That was disproven by the academic research dating all the way back to 1981. But we haven't heard much about that, have we? That's been sort of kept under wraps. And I would say if you looked at the investing advice available to the middle-class investor today, 90% of what you read is rooted in the passive investing model of understanding how stock investing works. 90% is this model that argues that either the timing does not work, or that timing is not a good idea, or the timing is not required, something along those lines. But the reality is just the opposite, that timing does work. It has always worked. And actually, the timing is required in order to invest successfully for the long term. So we're living in this strange twilight zone where we know how stock investing works. The wonderful thing is that the initial conclusion, the hasty conclusion that timing does not work, defies common sense. Our common sense tells us that when stocks are priced at insanely high price levels, stocks can't possibly offer the same long-term value proposition as they do when they're priced reasonably. But yet, that old model told us to stick with the same stock allocation regardless of price. So the passive investing model has always been a very, very difficult model to follow in the real world because it defies common sense. But yet we were told that this is what the historical data showed. We were told that this is what the academic research told. So a lot of people have bought into this model, including many of the, you know, the big name experts. And as the evidence has come in that this is not so, that just the opposite is so, it's caused a lot of people concern. It's made a lot of people, you know, I say the way I always put it is it's made a lot of people feel, you know, their tummies hurt because it causes a lot of anxiety. People feel, well, I've invested all my retirement money in this strategy that doesn't look like it's going to work. You know, if you're an expert, you might say, oh, I've written books or I've been giving advice based on this for many years. And if all of this is wrong, I'm going to have to, you know, I have to first of all have to change all the advice, and it makes me look sort of foolish. And I've ruined many, many lives, you know, and I'll have to come to terms with that. Still, the other side of the story is, if you make a mistake, the best thing to do is to acknowledge the mistake and go forward. So I'm a big believer in the idea of going forward. Rob Arnott has argued that we are entering a revolution. Revolution. That's Rob Arnott's word. A revolution in our understanding of how stock investing works. And I think that's precisely right. We are entering a revolution. All the ideas that we've been told are wrong. They're not all wrong, but the key idea is wrong. The thing that's wrong is the passive idea, the idea of keeping your stock allocation the same. And while the other ideas are right, you know, many of the ideas we've heard, the idea of sticking to your strategy for the long term, you know, which is used, you know, summed up by the phrase buy and hold or stay the course, the idea of ignoring the short-term ups and downs in the market, the idea that short-term timing doesn't work, there's a lot of support for that. The idea that you should try to keep your costs low, limit transactions, the idea that the average investor should probably be invested in index funds rather than choosing individual securities, all of these ideas have stood the test of time. But the big problem is the single most important indicator of success for the middle-class investor is what he does with his stock allocation. That's the thing that we have control over. That's what separates the successful long-term investor from the unsuccessful investor, the one who sets his allocation properly. And the one who follows the passive investing model can obviously not, it's not possible to set his allocation properly because the rational way to set your allocation is to set a different allocation depending on the price level. And the passive investor, by definition, that's what he's passive about, it sticks to the same allocation. So almost all of us, say 90% of us, have been following precisely the opposite strategy of what we would be following if we were aware of what the academic research of the past three decades said, if we were aware of the current state of knowledge about what it works in stock investing. Now, this year, something has happened, and that is that we've gone through this. What happened is when this idea of passive investing became popular, this now discredited idea, it did two things. It caused the most out of control, insane bull market in the history of the United States. A lot of people don't realize this, but a lot of people look back to the 1920s and they say, oh, you know, the stock market lost 90%. in the Great Crash, which led to the Great Depression, the 1929 crash. And a lot of people say, oh, you know, that could never happen again. That was so horrible. That could never happen. The reality is that, of course, the crash of 29 was caused by the out-of-control bull market of the 1920s. But what many people don't realize is the bull market of the 1990s was far, far worse than the bull market of the 1920s. The PE10 level at the top of the bubble in the 1920s was 33. A fair value PE10 level is 15. So in the Great Depression, we had gotten stock prices were about double what they should have been. January of 2000, the PE10 level was 44. Fair value was 14, 15. If you use 14 as your fair value, the price level in January of 2000 was three times fair value. So we were in a much, much worse situation than the situation in which we experienced a 90% price crash. So passive investing, I think it would be fair to say, has caused, you know, set up circumstances that were going to cause the greatest loss of middle class wealth in the history of the United States. Now that's water over the bridge. That happened, you know, a long time ago. 1995 through 1999 is when we saw that insane bull market. Up until 95, the bull market started in 82. Up from 82 till 95, the bull market was fairly contained. Through the 80s, all that was really happening is prices were absurdly low in 82. So prices were getting back to fair value and then going a bit above fair value. In the early 90s, we were flirting with the red alert danger zone. The red alert danger zone is a PE10 level above 20. We went above 20 at certain times. Then we would drop below. Got up to 21, maybe 22. And then in 95, things just went totally kerplooey. Things went totally nuts. And we went up to 25, 26. And from that point forward until January of 2000, things were just insane. We went from 20, well, I say in 95, I think we were around 25. And then we ended up at 44. You know, just totally insane price levels. And that's passive investing that did that to us. Passive investing is, I like to use analogies from everyday life so that people can understand what's going on. The way to think about passive investing is, say that you were driving a car and you wanted to know what speed it's safe to go. And you ask some people, you know, some experienced drivers, you know, what speed do you think is safe? And they said, well, the speed limit on the highway in the area where you are is 65. So some might say, well, I try to stay a little bit below the speed limit. Maybe I drive 60. And some others might say, well, I stay right at the speed limit. I go 65. And some others might say, I usually go a little above the speed limit. I go 70. I think that's safe. Most of the traffic on the highway goes 70. So I think if you stay with the traffic, you're not in the passing lane. You know, you're not really doing anything dangerous. So 60, 65, 70. Let's say 70. Let's say 70 is safe. Willing to take a little bit of risk. You're willing to go a little bit above the speed limit, but nothing out of control, nothing out of hand. Now, let's say that's equivalent to your stock allocation of 70%. If you look at the person who says it's safe to go 70, yeah, that's not a crazy person. That's a perfectly reasonable speed. You wouldn't get a ticket in most cases, if you were driving 70, where the speed limit is 65. In ordinary circumstances, you would not get a ticket. Same thing with a 70% stock allocation. My friend John Graney at the retireearlyhomepage.com website, he has a study where he looks at the optimal stock allocation. He looks at the historical data and he says, 74% is the optimal stock allocation. Now, There's an error in that study, and the error, an analytical error, and the error is that he ignores valuations. He just looks at all the years together. And so what he's really telling us when he does that study is, on average, if you ignore valuations, 74% is the optimal stock allocation. And I agree. You know, that's I've studied the historical data in some depth, and 74 is a good estimate of the optimal stock allocation. Somebody could say 70, somebody could say 80, but it's something in that neighborhood. So I think that's a good neighborhood number. If you ignore valuations, if you just say, what is the, in general, on average, what is the best stock allocation? Now, and the same way, driving 70 miles per hour on a highway with a 65 mile per hour speed limit is a good neighborhood number for what's safe. The problem with passive investing is that none of us ever invest on average. We invest at particular times. Just as people who ride on the highways drive at particular times and in particular circumstances. So what happens if, say, you're out on the road, you're driving 70, everything's fine, no threat of an accident, and you've been driving 70 for months, never had any problems. So you're convinced that that's the safe speed. Now something happens. You picked up this information on driving 70 back in the summertime, and the roads have always been clear all the days that you've been driving, and you've never had a problem. So you're convinced that 70 is a good safe speed to go. Gets you where you want to go in a reasonable time, and you don't get an accident. So you like it. You like this 70 mile per hour idea. But now something happens. It starts to snow. It's now wintertime. You've been doing this for several months. It's now late December. The snow is coming down, and it's coming down hard, and it's landing. There's snow and there's ice on the road, and it's building up. And you're driving 70. You see the problem. The 70 number is not a crazy number. The person who told you to drive 70 was shooting straight with you. But the person didn't think about what happens if the road conditions change, which they do. When there's snow on the ground, when there's ice on the ground, the safe driving speed might be 10 miles per hour, 15, maybe 20. A person driving 70 when there's 2 inches of snow on the ground and snow blowing in the air is going to get himself killed. Well, that's what happened in the stock market in the 1990s. Now, what happens, of course, on the roads when snow starts to come down is everyone slows down. Everyone around you slows down, and if you're listening to the radio, someone will come on the radio and say, it's snowing out there. Don't drive. You know, don't go out. Don't go on the highways if you can avoid it. It's dangerous out there, folks. You know, if you have to go somewhere, well, please slow down. Take it easy. There's no rush. You know, you want to get home alive. But that's not what happened in the stock area. What happened in the stock area is these people had done studies, and they determined the optimal stock allocation, but they never considered valuations. They never considered that circumstances change. And so our common sense was telling us, wait a minute, this is dangerous. These stocks, they've been putting 20% returns, 30%. This sounds dangerous. We've been borrowing massive returns from the future. Stocks are very dangerous today. We should be lowering our stock allocations. No. And the experts were saying, no, stay at the same stock allocation. If you're going 70, just keep going 70. Don't let that 2-3 inches of snow on the ground hinder you. You know, keep going. Don't touch the brake. And we did that. We listened. And for a while, we in God's grace, we avoided accidents. But of course, eventually, that was impossible. And eventually, we started to have accidents. And starting in January of 2000, stocks started providing a horrible, horrible, horrible long-term return. From January of 2000 forward, any possible asset class has beaten stocks. Money markets have beaten stocks. Treasury inflation protected tips have just, you know, beaten stocks by large margins. Certificates of deposit have beaten stocks. Everything out there. And, you know, now this year, what's happened in 2008 is that last year, 2008, this is January 1, we've had a big price crash. And a lot of people are looking at that price crash and they're saying, this is a bad thing. We've lost all this money. We're poor compared to what we were. You know, we're rich people, but we're poor in relative terms to what we were a year ago. Now, this is wrong. This is wrong. And I argue in all of these podcasts and in the articles at the site that for a new model of understanding how stock investing works that I call rational investing. It's the opposite of passive investing in every way. Passive investing says ignore valuations. Valuations are the most important factor in investing success. Setting your allocation is the most important thing you do. And passive investing says ignore valuations, ignore the most important factor, never change your allocation. The most important thing you have to do to be successful is to change your allocation when necessary, but don't do that. Now, obviously, this was not done intentionally. Obviously, these people made a mistake. And they got caught up in that mistake because investing is an intensely emotional endeavor. So once you make a mistake, the consequences are so devastating to so many human lives that it becomes almost impossible to acknowledge the mistake. So what's happened is the research is coming in more and more and more showing that what our common sense told us is absolutely right. You must change your stock allocation. The worst thing you can do as an investor is to engage in passive investing. That's the biggest mistake you could possibly make. Just as your common sense tells you. But the experts have been very uneasy about sharing this because it goes against what they thought at earlier times when the research came in showing that short-term timing does not work. Many of the big-name experts jumped to the hasty conclusion that meant that all forms of timing don't work. Not only short-term timing doesn't work, but they thought that also that long-term timing didn't work. So it wasn't necessary to change your stock allocation. All right. So, you know, we've now had huge, huge human devastation. The worst loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States. It all sounds bleak, but it's not bleak. And it's very important that we not give in. The rational model is rooted in the idea that we acknowledge that investing is an emotional endeavor. This is opposite of the passive model. The passive model says ignore all emotional factors. Assume that investing is 100% rational, and therefore the price is always right. And that's why passive investing advocates will tell you don't need to change your stock allocation, because if you assume that investing is 100% rational, overvaluation is impossible. There's never a need to change your allocation. The only problem, it all follows logically. The problem is that the assumption is false. If investing were 100% rational, we obviously never would have been at 3x fair value. So the problem with passive investing is that it's at odds with reality. It's an interesting theory, and all of the investing advice follows from the theory, but the theory is 100% at odds with the real world. In the real world, it's the opposite. Instead of investing being 100% rational, I'd say it's roughly 70% emotional and 30% rational. So when you invest passively, you're always doing the wrong thing. You're always doing the wrong thing. And every day you're training yourself to do the wrong thing. You're getting more and more experience in rationalizing. Once you agree to invest passively, you've agreed to give up the use of human reason, because human reason says you should be adjusting your stock allocation according, you know, when price changes. And you, of course, have to rationalize some. Why are you doing this crazy thing? The human mind doesn't like to do crazy things. And so once you start down that path of passive investing, you're looking for rationalizations. And you find them. And we find them with other investors. What we tend to do is we talk to our friends who also want to overinvest in stocks at times of high prices. We all have a get-rich-quick impulse within. And we say, hey, I'm getting a little funny about this. You know, maybe I should start being a little more prudent, you know, responsible, lower my allocation maybe to 20%, 30%. And your friend says, no, buy and hold, stay the course, timing doesn't work, stocks for the long run. He chants these sort of incantations at you, these marketing slogans. And these marketing slogans have great emotional power. They were designed to have emotional power. You know, ask any marketer what sells, and that will tell you don't list the pros and cons of the product in a television commercial. Reach for the emotion. You know, show a sexy girl, you know, that falls all over the guy when he buys the red convertible. You got to reach for the emotion to make the sale. So we give up the use of human reason, and then every day we build on that. We get more and more emotional because our common sense is always doing battle with our get-rich-quick impulse, and we always need rationalizations to keep common sense at bay. And it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And, of course, eventually you have a crash. And then once you have a crash, then common sense tends to reassert itself. But the trouble is that when common sense reasserts itself, if you've been following an emotional strategy, and passive investing is the most emotional strategy of all, it may not be common sense that reasserts itself. What really reasserts itself is a different kind of fear. The fear you have during an out-of-control bull market is the fear of missing out on the get-rich-quick scheme, missing out on the Ponzi scheme. We don't like to be left out. We want to be in there. We want to have our share. And so we go against common sense out of fear. But then after we lose, you know, a large percentage of our life savings, we have a different kind of fear. We have a fear of, I don't want to be involved in stocks. I don't understand stocks. Obviously, you don't understand stocks if you're investing passively. I don't understand them. I don't want to touch them. I don't want anything to do with them. And when that emotion catches on, and again, we all talk to our friends. Some of us now are talking to our friends and we're saying, I don't know, you know, I've lost a lot of money, but I'm thinking maybe prices were bad before, but I'm thinking maybe they're not so bad. Maybe I should, you know, keep some of my money in stocks. And your friend's saying, no, you're going to lose it all. Didn't you hear what so-and-so said on television? You're going to lose it all. Get out, man. Get out. It's not, if you buy into passive investing, you're buying into an extremely emotional approach. Extreme emotion on one side leads to extreme emotion on the other side. So we're in a transition today where we went from extreme emotion where we ignored valuations and therefore took on risk levels many, many times greater than we should have been taking on. And now the same people, the same experts who told us to ignore valuations are telling us, it turns out stocks are a lot more risky than we ever thought. You know, this is what Money Magazine said in their recent cover article. Turns out we were wrong. Stocks are much more risky than we thought. Now, the opposite is true. If you understand how valuations affect long-term returns, stocks are much less risky than almost anybody realizes. So long as you protect yourself By changing your allocation, by not investing passively, stocks are not nearly as risky as most people think. But we're hearing the opposite. The experts are saying, you know, get out, you know. They're not saying those words just yet, but it's being hinted at. Things are going to get worse. You know, if you can't handle the pressure, maybe you shouldn't be in stocks. You know, Taylor Larimore, the co-author of The Bogleheads Guide to Investing, he just put up a post. I'm going to do a separate podcast on it, but he said, you know, he's been preaching buy and hold for 10 years. You know, his whole book is buy and hold, don't sell. Somebody asked him 6 months ago, you know, Taylor, things look, I'm going to lose all my retirement money. Should I get out? Oh, no. Taylor said, don't lower your allocation. Passive investing, buy and hold, stocks for the long run. Now Taylor's saying he's thinking of getting all his money out of stocks, zero allocation. See, that's the flip side of passive investing. Passive investing is a hyper-emotional approach. So it's either ignore all risk, invest, you know, gamble your money, gamble all your retirement money, be totally imprudent, or go totally out of stocks. It's a black and white view of the world, passive investing. Totally emotional. Emotions tend to be black and white. How many people do you know who, they fall in love with someone? You know, they'll tell you, oh, she's perfect. She's a dream. You know, she's everything I've ever looked for. She's this, she's that. And then 3 months later, you know, she's a witch. She's a liar. She's this. She's that. And you're like, what? The same girl you're talking about? You know, or the same guy? Change the sexes. The problem is this person was never as virtuous and as wonderful as she was being described as being in the first place. I think the feminists have a phrase they call the Madonna whore complex. You know, either this girl is the answer to all your prayers, or she's just, you know, dirt. But that's because it's an unrealistic thing to build someone up and to make them this perfect creature. None of us are perfect creatures. So, you know, the song that I think gets it, that nails rational investing, is that song by the Eagles, Peaceful, Easy Feeling. You know, I've got a peaceful, easy feeling. And I know you won't let me down because I'm already standing on the ground. That's rational investing. That's rational. That's the new model. Rational investing is, it's not saying don't fall in love. Not saying don't invest in stocks. It's saying learn how stocks work before you invest in stocks. Learn the ABCs. Learn how valuations affect long-term returns. If you know that, then you know what's coming. Rational investors are not even a tiny wee bit surprised by this price crash. Rational investors have been predicting this price crash since the mid-1990s. Robert Shiller's on record. Robert Shiller gave testimony to the Federal Reserve and then to Congress in 1996, saying stocks are headed for a major price crash. Prices are far, far too high. And a price crash is inevitable. And he pointed out that the three times when prices went to insane levels, the average price drop on those three times was 68%. We're now at 60% this time. So we're on the low side. We're likely to see more drops, but not necessarily in the next year. It could be that we stabilize, or it could be that we go up. And then there'll be another price crash, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road, or 4 years. We don't know. But we certainly have not seen anything out of the ordinary. If anything, this price crash has been a very minimal one, given the valuation levels. If you compare it to the worst crash, it's nothing. We're now at a 60% drop. This is going back to January of 2000. It's about 40 to 45% in the last 15 months. But if you go back to January of 2000, it's now about 60%. Now, on an inflation-adjusted basis. But 60% is nothing for that valuation level. At valuation level much lower in 29, we had a 90% price crash. So 60% is nothing. A And if we were to go to the valuation levels we experienced on those three early occasions when we went to insane prices, we have another 50% price drop to go to get there from where we are today. So the problem was not that this price crash was unpredictable, or, you know, some people are saying, oh, it's a black swan. You know, who knew this was coming? Well, the people who knew were the people who have looked at the historical data, you know, spent 15 minutes, 20 minutes looking at the history of the stock market. But see, it's important. When I say, you know, people will hear that statement and they'll say, oh, he's saying that all these big name experts don't spend 15 minutes. And that's not true. People like, you know, well, John Bogle, so many others. They look at the historical data. It's not that they don't spend 15 minutes. The problem is they look at the historical data, but they always ignore the valuation factor. Just like I was telling you about the person who tells you it's safe to drive 70 miles per hour. What somebody like Bogle does is he looks at the average and he says, hey, 70% stocks on average looks pretty good. John Graney, he's got charts and tables and all the calculations are correct. He says 74% is optimal. Not just okay, not just safe, optimal. It's a good thing. On average, it's right. But they're not telling you, you know, people were looking for this, looking at this advice in 1996, 1997, 1998, when there were 3 inches of snow on the ground and a blizzard. And they're driving 70 miles down the hour, going dum-de-dum-dum-dum, you know. I'm safe, I'm prudent, I'm responsible, all the experts tell me so, dum-de-dum-dum. And then smash. They're dead. We need investing advice that tells us how stocks work in the real world. You see, in the real world, you don't invest in on average. You invest in a particular time, in particular circumstances. We need to know, what are the circumstances like today? Today, fair value, that 70% number isn't too crazy. That 70% number makes sense. If you've been following passive investing, I don't think it makes sense. If you've been following passive investing, you've suffered such horrible losses that I lean towards thinking you should get out of stocks altogether for 6 months or a year, learn the ABCs, and then come back with a new attitude and a new approach and a new strategy. But I don't think you should be 70% in stocks if you've been following the most emotional approach of all. But if you've been following rational investing and you've been going with a 20% allocation from 95 to the first part of 2008, and you've suffered maybe a 10% loss, because, you know, if you had 20% allocation and you had a 50% loss, you'd have 10% loss on your portfolio. I could see that person going to, certainly to 50%, and I think a good case could be made for going to 70%. I don't think that's crazy. So anyway, that's how stock investing works. Now, people are looking at this from the passive investing perspective, and they're saying, thank God 2008 is over. I've seen probably a dozen articles with that theme. Thank God 2008 is over. Well, 2008, it was horrible for the economy. I've talked with people. We have a guy that comes to our house to do, you know, jobs fixing up the house. He's a great guy, great work ethic. And, you know, he was by the other week to do some work we needed, and I was talking to him about the recession, and he said the number of calls he gets, it's 5% of what it used to be. You know, 5% for every 20 calls he used to get from just new customers, people he doesn't know, he's now getting one. Now, you know, that guy's been hurt in a very serious way, and we know lots of people who have lost their houses, people have lost their jobs. So in terms of the economy, yes, it's been a terrible year. But in terms of investing, no. In terms of investing, it's been a wonderful year. The passive investor looks at it in terms of, you know, is my portfolio number the number at the bottom of my portfolio bigger or smaller. If it's bigger, it was a good year. If it's smaller, it's a bad year. And that's a horrible way to look at it. Because what you're doing when you do that is you're just giving in to the emotion of stock investing. Because those numbers are not real numbers. You need to adjust those numbers for valuations. The numbers that you read on your portfolio statement in January of 2000 were three times the real number. So you can't trust those numbers. Something people need to understand about investing is none of us are only, well, very few of us are only owners of stocks. We think of ourselves as sellers. This is how we think psychologically. We think we're sellers and we want the highest price. So when prices go up, we view that as a good thing. That's not rational. Very few of us are solely sellers of stock. We are sellers and buyers. Buyers like low prices. So you should be rooting for low prices as well as rooting for high prices. You have two roles as a stock investor. I'm going to read a section from Bill Bernstein's book, The Four Pillars of Investing, where he talks about the value of low prices. This is page 60 of my copy. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that the dividend multiple halves from the current value, raising the dividend from its current 1.4% to 2.8%, still far lower than the 5% historical average, over the next 20 years. In that case, the speculative return will be a negative 3.4% per year for a total annualized market return of 2.8%. Sound far-fetched? Not at all. If inflation stays at the 2 to 3% level of the past decade, this implies a near zero real return over 20 years. Bill Bernstein wrote this book and published it in April of 2002. He's saying this scenario is not far-fetched. And he says this implies a near zero real return over 20 years. Bill Bernstein knew what was coming. At least part of his mind did. Bill Bernstein advocates passive investing in the other chapters of this book, but in chapter 2 he advocates rational investing. So he's telling us the reality of stock investing in this chapter. If you read only this chapter and ignored the other chapters of the book, this would be possibly the best book on investing ever written. Right up there with Irrational Exuberance. You have to be careful not to read the other chapters because they say the opposite of this chapter. That's what emotion does to an investing expert. This implies a near zero real return over 20 years. This is not an uncommon occurrence. It happened three times in the 20th century, from 1900 to 1920, from 1929 to 1949, and from 1964 to 84. 20 years, zero real return, common. And what's the common thread? What time period is it? There's something that is a common thread in those three time periods. Do you know what it is? 1900 to 1920, insane price levels. 1929 to 1949, insane price levels. 1964 to 1984, insane price levels. So what should all of the investing experts been thinking in 1995 when we went to insane price levels? 20 years of zero returns for stocks. Back to Bernstein. The stock market could crash. You heard me right. The most sustainable way to get high stock returns is to have a dramatic fall in stock prices. I have this in red, not yellow. I have much of this, the chapter 2, I use the yellow highlighter, on every page. But that sentence I have in red highlighter. I needed a different color. The most sustainable way to get high stock returns is to have a dramatic fall in stock prices. Do you see why I'm saying in the title of this podcast, 2008 was a very good year for stock investors? Bill Bernstein says the most sustainable way to get high stock returns is to have a dramatic fall in stock prices. Famed money manager Charles Ellis likes to tease his friends with a clever riddle. He asks them which market scenario they would rather see as long-term investors. Stocks rising dramatically and then staying permanently high at that high level? Or falling dramatically and staying permanently at that low level, which sounds better to you? Stocks rising dramatically and staying permanently at that high level, or falling dramatically and staying permanently at that low level? Which sounds better? Here's the answer. The correct answer is the latter. Stocks falling dramatically and staying permanently at that low level. Since with permanently low prices, you will benefit from permanently high dividends. As the old English ditty says, milk from the cows, eggs from the hens, a stock, by God, for its dividends. After several decades, the fact that, you see, dividends go up when prices fall. That's why 2008 was a very good year for stock investors. Look at what dividends were at the end of 2007, and then take a look at what they are today. Dividends have been going up, up, up as the price goes down, 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 because dividends are expressed as a percentage. And the lower the price, the higher the payout from dividends. And dividends is where most stock returns come from. 2/3 of your return from stocks is going to come from dividends over the long term. So you want a low price. You don't want a high price. After several decades, the fact that you are reinvesting income at a much higher dividend rate will more than make up for the damage from the original price fall. To benefit from this effect, you have to be investing for long enough, typically more than 30 to 50 years. To demonstrate this phenomenon, in figure 2.5, I've plotted three different scenarios. One, no change in the dividend multiple with its current 1.4% dividend. Two, a 50% fall, resulting in a 2.8% dividend. And three, an 80% fall, resulting in a 7% dividend. As you can see, the more drastic 80% fall produces a quicker recovery than the 50% fall. This table shows why. And then he has the table 2.5. After an 80% fall in prices, the higher long-term return eventually compensates for the initial devastation. Even better than having a long time horizon in this situation is having the wherewithal to periodically invest sums regularly at such low levels. This dramatically shortens the break-even point. The implications of the last scenario are profound. What this says is that a young person saving for retirement should get down on his knees and pray for a market crash. Your prayers have been answered, young investors, in 2008, so that he can purchase his nest egg at fire sale prices. For the young investor, prolonged high stock prices are manifestly a great misfortune, as he will be buying high for many years to invest for retirement. Alternatively, the best case scenario for a retiree living off of savings is a bull market early in retirement. It certainly is true that this price crash has devastated recent retirees. So it's not a good year for those people. That's one of the reasons why I'm a big advocate of the idea of reporting safe withdrawal rates accurately. If we report safe withdrawal rates accurately, retirees would know to go with lower stock allocations at times of extremely high prices. I have the only accurate safe withdrawal rate calculator on the internet at my site, passionsaving.com, that I know of. If you know of another one, please let me know. It's the only retirement calculator that includes the effect of valuations. Also at John Walter Russell's site, early-retirement-planning-insights.com. John and I developed that calculator together. John doing the research work, the hard work. And then Bernstein is saying that price crash is good for young investors, and it's certainly true that it's particularly good for young investors. But you know what? An argument can be made that we're all young, almost all of us are young investors, because even if you retire at age 65, today you might live to 95. You might live another 30 years. So even a retiree, you could get out of stocks. Some do. But the reality is, if you know how to invest effectively, if you know how to invest rationally, you're probably better not getting out of stocks at retirement, because stocks offer a better long-term return to those who invest rationally, not passively. If you're investing passively, my view is you should never be in stocks in the first place, retiree or no retiree. But if you are a rational investor, I think a good argument can be made for keeping a a reasonable stock allocation, even in retirement. And that means that even retirees, early retirees, you know, retirees in the early years of their retirement should want, you know, maybe not low prices, but not insanely high prices. Because while they might get benefits in the early years of that retirement, they're going to face, you know, many, many years of low returns if prices don't crash. So the price crash is good for most of us. It's good for all people up to the age of retirement, and arguably even for some people in the early years of retirement. The price crash is a boon. In January of 2000, the most likely 10-year return on stocks was a negative number. How the heck is the middle class ever going to provide for retirement when stocks are providing a negative long-term return? It's not possible. It's just not possible. Now, that's not true today. Today, the most likely 10-year return is, it's about, the last time I checked, it was around 5.4, 5.5, a little under 6%. Somewhere a little, you know, between 5 and 6%. Well, that'll work. With compounding, that'll get you where you need to go. So we've got stocks back. We lost stocks. We all went collectively insane in the 1990s, largely the doing of the experts. But frankly, we all contributed. It's not fair to blame the experts, you know, in total, because we went along with it, didn't we? We went along with it. We should have known better. We have common sense. So we did great harm. We did great harm to all stock investors when we didn't speak up about the insane bull market, but that's water over the bridge. But in 2008, we got back to where we need to be. Now stocks offer a good long-term value proposition again. Now we can start rebuilding. Now there's a second way in which we can begin rebuilding, and I'm only going to touch on that briefly on this podcast, but I'll be touching on it in much more depth in future ones. The other way is we are recovering our emotional balance. We are recovering our humanity. Honest posting on safe withdrawal rates has been banned at all retire early boards and all indexing boards. There's a very exciting thread going on at the bogleheads.org board where Taylor Larimore he's abandoned passive investing. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say those words. But he has said that he will, if prices continue to go down, he is going to get out of stocks entirely. One of the longtime posters there referred to it as buy, hold, and bail. Buy stocks at high prices, hold them. Don't lower your valuation when prices are insane. But then when prices drop by 50%, bail out entirely. I think it would be fair to describe that strategy as the worst strategy the human mind could conceive of. And I'm not making fun of Taylor. Taylor's just doing what, you know, thousands of investing experts are doing. Bill Bangen recently went to a 0% stock allocation. He's advocated he's an author of one of the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, which, you know, say that 4% is you know, doesn't matter. 4% is always safe. That obviously doesn't work if you bail out of stocks in the first price crash. And Bill Bangen has done that. But I'm not knocking Bill Bangen either. I think Bill Bangen and Taylor Larimore are ahead of the curve. All passive investors are going to bail, I believe. I don't believe passive investing can ever work in the real world. 99% of those who followed passive investing strategies will be selling stocks at some point, because the losses that go with passive investing are just too devastating for any human to withstand, unless you're a multi-millionaire. You know, if you have $10 million, you can afford these losses. But I don't think Taylor Larimore is in that circumstance, and I don't think Bill Bangen is in that, for all I know, is in that circumstance, and certainly not Bill Bangen's clients. So I think he's probably doing the right thing, and Taylor's probably doing the right thing. The only thing I wish that both Taylor and Bill would do is I wish they would acknowledge that they've abandoned passive investing, because once they openly acknowledge they've abandoned passive investing, that opens the door to the discussion of more reasonable, realistic, responsible investing strategies. And that's what I would like to see us get to. But in any event, these are exciting times. what we're seeing on the bogleheads.org board was unimaginable 15 months ago. Unimaginable. And I'm an optimist. I had hopes that board would open up to honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and all sorts of valuation related questions, but I never anticipated what we're seeing today. You know, you see it and you can't believe it. That's what's happening, is that investors are getting in touch with their common sense. They're saying, wait a minute, this high risk gambling approach to investing, it's not working out, and I don't feel good. I don't like losing all my money. I my common sense told me I would lose my money before, but I listened to what the experts said, and I talked with my friends, and I rationalized. I talked myself into it. I said, it'll never happen. Stocks are never going to perform again as they always have in the past. It's different this time. Passive investing might work this time. No. No, it never is different. It always happens the same way. Passive investing, passive/emotional investing, have been tried 4 times in history. The first time it brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it. The second time it brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it. The third time it brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it. The fourth time it brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it. I am beginning to see a pattern develop. Passive investing is not the way. So 2008 was a wonderful year for stock investors for 2 reasons. One, we got stocks back. We need stocks to finance our financial freedom. We got them back. Stocks at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. That hasn't been true since 1995. We went without stocks for 13 years. We got them back. Good news. Two, we're getting our common sense back. We're not there yet, but we've made initial steps to recovering sanity, to getting to a point where we can discuss stock investing in realistic ways. And that is wonderful, wonderful news for the middle class investor. Now, the second part of the podcast title is, I say 2008 was a very good year for stock investors. Let's hope 2009 is not a repeat. Well, that's a strange thing to say, isn't it? If suffering a price crash of 40% was a good thing, as I say, wouldn't another 40% price crash in 2009 be an even better thing? Shouldn't we be hoping for a price crash down to 8, P10 level of 8, and then we can make a killing, no? P10 level of 8, if you look on the stock return predictor, it gives a 10-year annualized return of 17% real. Wouldn't that be even better than what we've got now, 5 or 6% real? No. I say no. Why do I say no? Rational investing is emotionally balanced investing. Going crazy and thinking that it's okay not to change your stock allocation when prices are at insane levels, that's emotion. That's emotion talking, not sense. Rooting for insane bear markets is just as crazy, just as emotional as rooting for insane bull markets. We need a drop to a PE10 level of 8 about as much as we need to an increase to a PE10 level of 20. It's two sides of the same coin. It's sick. It's unhealthy. It's financially devastating. Yes, it's true. If the PE10 level goes to 8, the most likely 10-year return is 17% real based on the historical data. Great, whoopee. You know what also becomes a live possibility if we drop to a P10 level of 8? The D word. Middle class investors are suffering today because they followed passive investing for many years, and just as could have been predicted, it has caused devastating losses of their accumulated savings of a lifetime. You hit middle-class investors with another 50% drop, and you're going to tip this economy into a depression. That's Rob Bennett's take. I don't want to see it. I don't like talking about it. But we need to make you know, we need to get some straight talk on investing from these quote-unquote experts. And I feel that these people are playing with fire. They're playing games. Now, you know, the extent to which they know they're doing this deliberately, that's a different question. My sense is they're not doing it deliberately. My sense is they themselves are in a state of confusion today. They don't know which way to turn. But I know that the experts are talking amongst each other. Michael Kitsis told me, he's a financial planner, and he told me that a lot of financial planners are talking about abandoning the passive investing model. But they're not talking publicly about it. You know, I can't get them to come to my site and say, Rob, you know, we're looking for some new ideas. Can you tell us what the retire early community and the indexing community have come up with over the first 7 years of the great safe withdrawal rate debate? People aren't going public. People need to go public. Taylor Larimore did the right thing in acknowledging that he's made mistakes in his investing strategy, but he's acknowledging it only implicitly. He needs to go the next step. He needs to say, look, I was wrong. And then he needs to go to John Bogle and say, you know, John, I was wrong because you were wrong. You have given bad advice. I followed your advice when I wrote my book. And I'm having to abandon this because I put excessive trust in you. Not because you're bad, not because you're dumb, because you're human. You made mistakes. So I am worried. I am worried. I'm very encouraged by the sorts of comments I'm seeing. People are getting fed up with the BS. You're seeing that all over the place. Listen to the podcast I did on the Money Magazine article where the editor of Money was speaking at some sort of conference, and he was telling people the standard BS, you know, buy and hold, stocks for the long run, don't time the market, blah, blah, blah. And he said, you know, one guy stood up and said, you know, is there ever a point at which you would stop this gibberish? Does there come a point when people have suffered so much that you'll just break down? I think we've reached that point where we have to do that. We have to sober up. We have to start being serious about investing. And, you know, that we're not quite seeing. I hope we're working our way up to it, but we're not seeing it. If we don't see it, what you're going to get is people becoming increasingly disillusioned with stocks. The Taylor Larimore, Bill Bangin approach is going to catch on like wildfire if prices continue to go down. And it can accelerate faster than anybody can control it. So we don't know, you know. And it's a dangerous game of chicken we're playing today. I think we need to have a national debate on the realities of stock investing. What works, what doesn't? What does the historical data tell us? What does the academic research of the last 30 years tell us? You know, why, you know, what's going through the expert minds? I'd like to see Taylor and Bill Bangin and John Bogle and all the others, you know, write some pieces on, you know, why, how I came to realize that my investing advice does not work. Very simple question. What's gone through my mind? What I would do different? What I think we need to study to learn to do better? Those sorts of questions. We need acknowledgments of mistakes, because it's only by acknowledging mistakes that we can ever learn. We can ever move forward. And the tragic part of all this is that all of the knowledge is already there. We don't need to really do the research. It's all there. There's a group of investing experts that doesn't get much attention, but it's probably 10%. And they've been studying the historical data for 30 years now. They know what works. You know, Robert Shiller, I talk about them all the time. Robert Shiller, John Walter Russell, Ed Easterling, Cliff Asness, Rob Arnott, Andrew Smithers, Peter Bernstein, Bill Bernstein for one chapter of his book, John Bogle, you know, for large portions of most of his speeches. There are lots, lots and lots of good information out there, rational information, not passive. So, we need to get that out there, and we need to avoid a repeat of 2008. So the message I'm going to have, you know, looking backward, looking forward, I don't buy into this idea that this was a terrible year for investors. It was a terrible year for the economy. It was a terrible year for middle-class people who were led to believe they were following a prudent strategy when really they were following a gambler's strategy, a high-risk strategy. So that certainly it's been a devastating reality check. But in objective terms, the $8 trillion we lost was all cotton candy. It was never real in the first place. It was just, you know, monopoly money. It never existed. It existed on paper. It was not real. And I believe that the economic crisis is caused by passive investing. There have been other factors, but passive investing is by far the dominant cause. When you take $8 trillion out of the economy, you're obviously going to have, you know, an economic recession. I mean, come on. So we fix the passive investing problem, and I don't see any reason why we can't get the economy back on its feet. It's going to take time, but we can win people's confidence back if we talk straight. So that's my message for the coming year, is the need to talk straight. How do we get the big name experts to acknowledge what the literature tells us and has been telling us for a good bit of time now? Why don't we share this with the average investor? Let them know what we've learned. Let ourselves know, you know? The experts, in order to tell in order to speak publicly, they're first going to have to come to terms themselves with the realities of stock investing. So we need the experts themselves to get over their emotional attachment to passive investing, to acknowledge that it doesn't work, that it's failed, that it's always failed. It's failed on every time it's been tried, the emotional approach has failed. So we should be grateful that stocks are today at prices where we can obtain good returns. That's good news, but it would be bad news to have a repeat. See, the rational investor, this is the magic of rational investing. The passive investor always wants higher prices. Higher, 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 higher. No, too high? There is no such thing. 3 times fair value? Fine. Let's go to 4 times. Let's go to 5 times. Let's go to 6 times. You know, how dangerous can we make it? But that's not the rational investor. And the passive investor on the downside is just as emotional. Prices go down. You don't hear Taylor Larimore saying, maybe I'll cut my allocation. No, he's not going to cut his allocation a little bit. He's going to go to zero. You see, there's this extremism that is just inherent in this emotional approach. The rational investor is an emotionally balanced investor. That's the paradox. The paradox of all this is that the passive investing model, passive investors are very much aware that emotions affect investing. But the way they address that problem is they say, let's ignore emotion. If we just ignore it, it will go away. And the reality is just the opposite. When you ignore your emotions, when you go into denial about your emotions, you empower them. Your emotions become 10 times more powerful. The right way is to be the peaceful, easy investor with both feet on the ground. The peaceful, easy investor doesn't want to see high stock allocations. The peaceful, easy investor is thrilled that the P10 level is down at reasonable levels. But the peaceful, easy investor doesn't want to see it go lower. So he wants to see straight talk so that we can restore people's confidence. And so that we can stabilize at a P10 level of 15, which offers a great long-term return as long as we stay there. Going down may cause a depression, which is the worst of all worlds. Going up will cause another price crash, which is ultimately leads to the same place. Staying at 15 gives us a 6% real return for many years to come. So let's all work on that. Let's all work in 2009 on restoring emotional balance to the investing project. Good luck with your investing strategies.